Hallo.
Hi. It's so good to be here, standing in front of so many people. I'm kind of overwhelmed, and I'm very happy to give you a kind of sneak peek into our last play. It's called Freiheit.exe, Freedom.exe, and in the background, you will see some images of the production. The play was very dense content-wise, and I'll just try to give a kind of a summary, a very rough summary. So I really kicked out some stuff, so we still have time for Q&A, yeah? The premiere was in November, and in the year before, I had already done a production where I was talking about big tech oligarchy and how this is threatening to our democracy. I was also talking about colonialism and surveillance. That was in the German Opera of Berlin, Deutsche Oper. And this is kind of a next step with this play. I want to dive deeper into this ideology. So some things of this ideology kind of felt familiar from history. My thesis is that the tech oligarchy people just recycle misogynist and colonial perspectives and ideologies and coach them, sugarcoat them into a language of progress. And by this, bring them in to the idea of freedom as a sort of malware. We start with the Manifesto of Futurism. It was written by Filippo Tommaso Marinetti in the year 1909. Many of you already may know it. He was a fascist and a supporter of Mussolini. And with this manifesto, he really celebrated the cult of speed, of velocity. This is a small hint to accelerationism of today. So even before the First World War, it was about how technology can be brutal, destructive, and it didn't like science. He really liked mass events with big flags, fascism. And here we have a quote of him that you might already know. We want to celebrate the war, the only hygiene of the world. So war as something cathartic. We want to celebrate the destruction of the anarchist and the destruction of the woman. So as you will see, the misogyny will start in futurism, but will go on to the Silicon Valley and all the tech bros in the Silicon Valley up to this date. Later on, he wrote a second manifesto. I think it's interesting because on one hand, you can see how humans and machines go together and how age can be surpassed. And I think that point is a bit more important than the next one.
And this is about how man can reproduce without women. So he wanted to solve the problem of reproduction because he's basically of the opinion that men shouldn't care about desire and opinion. They should focus on the development of technology and heroic actions. This reminds me a lot of the speak of incels. I looked into those a bit. The incel attacker, he wrote about abolishing sexuality and, basically reproduction without women. To calm down a little bit, let's see some women in technological history. Ada Lovelace.
Die ENIAC-Programmiererinnen und es ist ja so, dass Frauen
die very important programmer, and it's very important to see that women were very prevalent in programming because typing was a women's issue, because they had very small hands, so men took care of the hardware instead, and the moment that money got involved, it changed. But let's take a look back at Marinette. Today, Peter Thiel says something like, we can't look like, because like the world is like getting too feminine and small and women aren't serious people. Curtis Jabon, maybe you heard of his name. The company environment has devolved from, it basically has been castrated. There's no masculine energy. Mark Zuckerberg and all of these also reminds of Björn Höcke, who was searching for his masculinity for a while now.
Auf social media sieht man dann
on social media, you see, thanks to diverse AI generators, these pictures or like these. You may be aware of the Pepe meme. What I want to talk about is, I don't want to talk about the planned fight in the Colosseum. I want to talk about how the classics, how the antique times are having a revival, or Zuck is taking quotes from Caesar, for example, on his t-shirt. A world without Caesars would be nicer, actually, as we can have another pictures. And then we have statues in Zuck's garden, like these statues. But these are not actually antique tradition. Maybe it would be good if you don't drop out of university, but actually study this kind of stuff. Because it continues with this whole bad relationship with antique Rome, because this whole idea of this, it's a fascistic narrative that we can see in Mussolini, in Hitler, all of these statues that were not white. They just lost their paint over time. And ancient Rome was a very diverse society where a lot of people from the Mediterranean area moved. But currently, there is this classicist aesthetics that is having a revival, this dream of ancient Rome. Mark Zuckerberg is just one of many who want this. Here we can see one of these statues, that how colorful they actually were. And then we can see on the right David from Michelangelo, how it looks today, and architectural dreams that we can see here, even in a time when these statues got destroyed, actually. This is just a render, but this is a real plan by a tech company person who wants to create this Prometheus statue over 100 meters higher than the Golden Gate Bridge. We're getting to colonial utopia and engineer elites. There will be a video in the background for some nice images. This is about Technology Incorporated. This is about the grandpa of Elon Musk, who was a leading expert in this. This was a movement that moved from engineering elite. They dreamt of engineering elite in politics. It was about energy certificates instead of money, about getting rid of democracy. And they were complaining about how society is not incorporating technology enough, that there is a delay, basically. But then this movement basically got rid of itself. Elon Musk's granddad then went to the apartheid regime in South Africa.
And we talked about this in our drama, in the apartheid mindset by Peter Thiel, who is working in the White House. And sex hat das schon in den 90ern geschrieben bei Stanford, the diversity myths.
Dann gibt es hier in Parallelseite, das könnt ihr natürlich jetzt nicht.
And now parallel to that, you can probably can't read that. There's an image of the Freistadt Fumer, Free State Fumer, a fascistic commune of a very colorful amount of people. They did orgies, took drugs, and also they had the soldatic fetish. The senatorial elements of fascism, as you can see in the March of Rome later, they all were created here. And this is all a preview of these startup cities, the taking over of cities or land to found your own country. On the left, the Atlantropa project, by Hermann Sörgel, 1928. It was very big. He very much concretely planned it to connect the African and the European continent by drying up the Mediterranean. There were supposed to be big dams with a gigantic amount of work. And the very engaged multimedia campaign, he wrote a lot of manifestos, did advertising, he wrote a libretto for a Lantropa symphony, and this didn't happen, and the guy died very embittered. And we have similar ideas nowadays. You can see down there some institutes trying to build a city on international waters, island, the idea of a network state. And to do that, that actually happened, but only for a short time. The startup city of Prospera on an island in the on the coast of Honduras, it was founded with US American investor money. And then the putsch happened, some judges got swapped out until this was allowed to build, and then they started doing that. There was a 100% daughter company of the TU München, the München University. They had an investor congress in Munich 2019 under the motto of technology behooves you. And then they dropped out of it because of the human rights. Apropos human rights, in futurism, in the futurist manifesto, there was this idea of a new human, and that's of course very propagated along a lot of centuries or scenes. You've seen that in religions, where there's like a new case of being a human in via ascetics or orgies or whatever. And in the 19th and 20th century, everyone, people have again and again talked about improving humans in National Socialism, in fascism, in Soviet communism. There have also been positive ideas that have been more idealistic, like giving yourself to something, but it's also a history of violence, terror, and crime. So, because if you design a human like that, is that an individual choice, or is it a societal imperative? So, does everyone have to be like this new human? Is it a political state where you destroy the old human in one way or the other? You can see here with Leni Riefenstahl, Olympia 1938, the propaganda movie, the body ideal. There's a small cutout from the video where you can see that she's orienting herself with these old white statues and then cutting over to that perfect Olympian body. The transhumanism, I can only touch on the surface, even though it's very important, with a lot of sub-streams, so to speak. Transhumanism also, in its core, was like overcoming human limits, like bodily, intellectual, physical. That is from Julian Huxley, a geneticist. And in the beginning, it was about individual decisions. There are some interesting ideas in there. In medicine, there are many elements that are very practical, transhumanist, like prothesis and similar devices. There's a reclamation manifesto by Max Moore, 1999. You can find this on the net, a letter to Mother Nature, where he complains how unperfect humans are, and he makes very concrete improvement ideas, control over genes, a meta brain, and further development of this thought is the biohacking, the idea of longevity, booming fantastically right now, like extending life, becoming immortal if possible. That's a light, pretty heuristic. There's a big market docking from all sorts of humans with gene therapy and all kinds of pills that people swallow, and that is a certain pressure. And if it continues like this, there's some more little snippets from our part. The norm does not mean the aesthetics. Our norm, we call it individualism. And like this, it continues. When there's an external or intellectual ideal as a societal imperative, when it that gets established, humans don't want to or can't participate, well, it becomes a privilege. There will be large inequality.
So there's going to be a conference that's planned for Las Vegas and next year, sponsored by Peter Thiel and so on. And the plan of this event is that top athletes will be competing against each other. Oh, what's happening? The sound's gone. The screen is gone. Okay, it's back. So NATOcon 22, the NATOcon. Okay. So talking about norms and enhancement, let's start with the kids. You might have already heard of pronatalism. Elon Musk is very famous proponent of this, and he thinks that there's not enough humans, not enough kids on this world, and that humans need to propagate a lot more. And with this, of course, it's not meant that there's not enough kids, but not enough of the -- right kids, you know, with the right ethnics, the right IQ, the correct political views, and so on and so on. You can already imagine in what kind of a direction this is going. So time is running. And I could talk about all the people that are like coming to this conference, but I would like to focus on the family Collins that you can see. And the mother dreams of an American Medal of Honor once she'll win, once she'll have 14 kids. These 14 kids are sorted by gender. So the kids are made in vitro. And the parents decide beforehand which gender they will have. And as the Collins family says, they are so happy, the kids, a lot happier than others. So there's also a text about this called Hyper-Racism. And it's criticizing the idea of how the I'm sorry, I think I got this wrong. So this text, Hyper-Racism, is actually a text that is a fan of splitting up humans into different IQs, and then after the IQs, you will get different classes. So we all are kind of remembered now of eugenics and National Socialism and how this is going to split up society. So Peter Thiel also wrote a small text and said, people with IQ below 90 should be sterilized by force. And now, you know what, Björn Höcke says similar stuff. So let's stay attentive when it comes to these ideologies. Now, next up, we want to talk about neoliberalism. Peter Thiel is very often quoted with the sentence, democracy and freedom cannot go together. Well, this kind of sentence, of course, makes you think, but many neoliberals of the old school, and with that we don't only mean Ayn Rand, a famous author and proponent of the neoliberalism and libertarianism in the US, but by that I also mean the Montelang Society in Germany that was founded in Switzerland in the 1940s by Peter Hayek. And it is still a loose network that is connected all over the world. So we're people are like connected loosely, and many of them are in positions of powers, are in think tanks, are professors, and they have very diverse ideas about economics and politics. So it is always very remarkable that there's a big democracy skeptic in this kind of group of people. There's also skepsis against women's rights and skepsis against decolonization. So this is just some kind of strings. It's kind of like a red string that goes through. And the sentence of Peter Thiel is in this direct tradition, because the freedom he means is not the freedom we mean. So if you want a libertarian economic society, a stable democracy or democratic ideals are in the way of this economic perspective, as well as decolonization and the decolonization and the rights of women, and maybe also all other genders. The Mont Pèlerin Society, I don't have enough time to talk about them more, but in the 1990s, there was another interesting movement, the paleo-libertarianism. Paleo-libertarianism. So it was conservative about families, but of course in economics very liberal. And Mr. Rothbard, some of you might have heard of him already, wrote an essay, Right-Wing Populism, a Right Strategy for the Paleo Movement. And there he comes up with the idea to fight against the elites together with the rednecks. So in the neoliberalism, traditionally the working class, aka the rednecks, are not really part of this ideology, but they are welcomed into this text. And also the Ku Klux Klan is part of it, and also the in this text, and also the words America First are used very often in this text, just so you know.
Neoreaktionären, die jetzt gerade im Valley eine große Rolle spielen. Hat sich im Grunde Doge ausgedacht. Bei ihm hieß
I'm going to talk about Curtis Yarvin now and his text Rage, Recovery Employees. And he thinks that the state should be ruled or led by a king, a red Caesar, or a red king. And this, of course, leads back to the idea of Technocracy Inc. And he constantly is saying right now that Donald Trump is not strict enough for him. Yarvin has been financed and pushed forward a lot by Peter Thiel. And with him, you find a lot of thoughts about an Italian philosophist, Evolo. And he was also a Mussolini sympathizer, so we're back in 100 years ago. And he was something like a spiritualist racist. He was against Catholicism, felt more attracted towards Hinduism and Buddhism, and really didn't hate modernist. He hated the French Revolution, and he was very Mussolini and fascism close. And this philosopher had the idea of an intellectual aristocracy. He, again, was an important giver of idea for the Italian neo-fascists, but also for the 70s and 80s from the Italian, in Italy, where there was a lot of right-wing terrorists. Then he was picked up again by the identitarian movement here in Germany, and his book has been reprinted now in a German publishing house.
Just very briefly, let's talk about Peter Thiel and his Antichrist ideas in current times. This is his ad. I think his PR people have a lot to do. I don't want to really talk about these lectures and Peter Thiel's speeches about the Antichrist in this short time, but I really find it interesting that the founder of the Act 17 collective, it's about the tech collective. The founder is the wife of one of the founders of a military company. So these are all connected. And I really want to point out that these nationalist Christendom that you can see in the US spreading a lot, that's getting very big and very visible, that this is about a political movement, actually. And they are organized. Peter Thiel and J.D. Vance, for example, they sponsored an app, the Hello app, which is a prayer app that is also available in Germany. And influencers are doing advertisement for these, like Gwen Stefani. And this is like religious incinatory elements, and autocrats always love this. Because I have to hurry up. You can see the fist with the rosary beads. This is a warrior gesture. This is about friends and enemies. I would like to remind you of Carl Schmitt, who J.D. Vance really likes to read. And let's talk about accelerationism now. This is a very broad philosophical spectrum, but I want to talk about Nick Land a little bit. In the 90s, he was basically one of the fathers of modern accelerationism. In his thoughts, capitalism is not a human invention, but an autonomous force that through positive feedback loops basically accelerates by itself. And he thinks that capitalism can... Well, he doesn't really want to overcome it. He wants to reinforce it. He doesn't really like people. And in one of his texts called Meltdown from that time, he has this idea that a techno-capitalist acceleration, humans will dissolve basically and will be replaced and overrun by technological processes, and they will made. This is basically post-human thought. This is not really humanist in its targets in any way. There are a few quotes you can see here. And in right-wing terrorism, there's also accelerationism. This idea is present there, and this video will start soon. And basically, this idea that through attacks you can collapse a society, like the attacker in Christchurch had this idea. This is a very violent idea. Bitte?
Ich habe schon gesagt, das Video kommt gleich.
Sure.
Here is now the video.
So, das ist jetzt EAC, der effektive
Accelerationismus. That is EAC, Effective Accelerationism from 2022-2023. This is Guillaume Verdun, a quantum computing researcher who everyone follows, a meme landscape artist. And he's basically, let's make it short, he is a spiritus recto for Marc Andreessen for his techno-optimism manifesto. And I will briefly want to quote from this manifesto. We are not victims, we are conquerors. This is heroism. The lightning works for us. This is a very heroic positioning. And there's the video that you can see in the background.
Die Idee ist eigentlich, es gibt so eine Art thermodynamische Pflicht des Universums.
Thermodynamic duty of the universe. And this is not about life and intelligence, what's spreading that, but technology and capitalism. These are the motors of civilization. This is about borderless growth. And then he quotes Everything and Nothing and the Manifest of Futurists, Nick Land, Ayn Rand, and all of them, basically. This is has a bit of a religious drive. It's a techno-libertarian movement that doesn't want governmental regulation, and everyone that who regulates or thinks or wants to reflect, those are stupid people, and yeah, just impossible. So the nation is basically the death of civilization. So why all of this?
Ja, ich hatte in die Ankündigung geschrieben, was das
alles. Well, I wrote in the abstract, what does this have to do with Palantir? Well, this is a bit abstract, but the point of control is, the more I read about this, it's really present in all of these ideologies, in all of these observations of our current ideas. So the ideology, which I could only introduce in part, they all talk implicitly about controlling people, ideas, lands, everything, basically. This is authoritarianism that spreads everywhere. And I want to talk about Palantir in a second. The private companies and governments are very intrinsically connected, especially in security ideas. So just like as a hint towards Palantir, she was fascinated by the technology, the possibility to about security services and police and justice to look at every phone in the world in short term just by knowing the number. That was Sebastian Kurz, the former prime minister of Austria, who is by now part of the cybersecurity bubble. He is now working for Peter Thiel. And then he founded a cybersecurity company called Dream together with the CEO of the of some group called Pegasus. You probably know this. This is a spy software that many journalists and others are surveilled by. Now about Palantir, we researched this a lot. We talked with Palantir itself. I talked to security services and, well, I could only look at the demonstrations, but I could get an image. That is limited, but because we cannot access the software itself, but that is actually part of the problem. There is limited transparency. That has been the talk already. After thinking for a long time and thinking about a lot of details, there are two points that I see. One, there is this reconstructing of borders. Palantir are security influencers, let's call them like that. They are very marketing known people who sell you a product that has been developed previously and that with all of its opportunities is very tasteful.
So is it very tasty to these administrative bodies? And then there's an advertisement of the page from the largest German police union. There's just a small part of that advertisement. Looks like a long historical scientific article, but it's not marked. And they said they are working on it, but they are not changing anything about the article. And that's where they advertise Palantir, which is still banned in Germany, with this sneaking moving of the window. They buy the software and then change the law to fit. We saw that in Baden-Württemberg and with the all the debate around it, with the new police law there. Democracy is well, weakened in a large volume. We have to keep that in mind. And with these software that allows these activities, and you can see the people who they interact with, Peter Thiel, Alex Karp, the values they have, we really have to question our values. And some politicians, and I only use the male gender here, when they say, who cares, these values don't have to fit with our values because the software is very limited, and then I will remind them.
The data trap is this, that if you allow another country to gain access to really critical data about your society, over time, that will erode your sovereignty. You no longer have control over that data.
And by the way, values, this is the end, and we can ask questions. The data trap is get data about very critical stuff in your society, and with time, this will diminish your own sovereignty. Looking at how this works in other countries, we can see it. Look at this video on Twitter by Homeland Security. Motherfuckers.
I agree. I'll travel across the land, searching far and wide. Each Pokemon
to understand the power that's inside. Immigration US of Palantir.
That they got new money, they got a new job by the ICE.
Makes possible automatic deportation practice. And it's not like these tech oligarchs are not talking with politics. And there's a source, Timothy Snyder says about our freedom. It can't just be there for the privileged. It's not a luxury. It needs societal human limits. Freedom is not a natural state. It's a law that we have to discuss and
Thank you.
Vielen Dank. Es bleibt also
thank you. So we have some time for questions. The Signal Angel doesn't have anything, but on microphone 4 there's a question. Thanks for the summary. What I want to get to know better is what is the glue holding this new right alliance together? Why do humans who say they are Christian and have a Christian idea of human, why do they want to transcend humanity? Neoliberals and Christian fundamentalists hate communists together and the left, sure, but nowadays they are very different people and groups. What is uniting them? I think this cognitive dissonance we are all having, yes, I think that humans, the glue is white supremacy, it's very strong. Wishing to be worth something, and other people are like a projection thing to become stronger. Like every right wing drift in the world works like this right now. Christendom, as you can see with Charlie Kirk and his wife, it's very elastic. I asked myself if I think faith is something where it's very elastic and you can interpret it in a lot of directions. And I don't think of if the church would like it as much. Well, Peter Thiel said Pope Leo was the Antichrist. So anything goes. I don't know if these traditionalists are that strong with AI and transcending humanity. I don't think they're looking at it when you are talk about the population. Thanks. Time is very short. We can't really do more questions, but you can tell us where we can meet you to talk about more questions. Yes. And I go out here to the left and we can sit a bit and talk about stuff if you want to. Thanks.